thank you, and I appreciate the invitation to participate in the Kellams College. The thing that I hope we can do, I don't know what the format has necessarily been in previous sessions, but there'll probably be a number of questions that arise at various points in the presentation, and I'll leave it up to you if you want to address those as they come up. Main objective from my part is to try and send you home with as many answers to questions as we can accomplish. What I want to begin with is first kind of an overview of where the U.S. is relative to reproductive technology in general. And these are the technologies in terms of reproductive technologies that are currently available or on the horizon. And our reproductive biology group at the University of Missouri actually has faculty working in all of the areas that are listed on this slide. As indicated in the introduction, a large part of the work that we've been involved with over the last, actually, 10 to 15 years is primarily focused on that first line in terms of ester synchronization and AI programs. The second point there, I think, and what you'll see from some of the data over the duration of the talk, has come about not only from our program, but other programs across the country that work in this area relative to the improvements and understanding of how to manipulate the ester cycle more effectively with the use of ultrasound. And so I think some of the data will bear that out. These are statistics, however, that more or less are a reality check relative to where we're at currently in the U.S. Cattle industry. And from a reproductive standpoint, they're somewhat discouraging or disappointing, especially for those of us that work on the education side of the cow-calf industry. The first line, I think, explains a large part of that relative to the fact that 69% of cow-calf enterprises are viewed as secondary income sources. And on that basis, I think that explains the following three lines relative to where we're currently at based on data from the National Animal Health Monitoring Service. The first line indicates that only 50% of producers report an established breeding season of any specific duration. Only 34% of beef herds are routinely pregnancy checked, and only 10% of beef cattle enterprises utilize artificial insemination to any significant extent, either in with their heifers or cows. George Seidel in the reproduction group at Colorado State spoke at the BIF meetings in 1995 in Sheridan, and a quote from the reprint of the article that he published from that proceedings, I think it summarizes where we're at still today relative to technologies that are available and practical relative to beef cattle enterprises in general, and that is that AI and ester synchronization can be and generally are regarded as the most important and applicable of all available biotechnologies to the beef cattle industry, yet we still have a fairly disappointingly low adoption rate relative to their use. The NAM survey in 1988 tried to get users across the country or have failed historically to adopt various reproductive procedures. And the statistics shown on this slide pertain primarily to three categories: synchronization, artificial insemination, and pregnancy diagnosis. And if you look at the largest response categories relative to those three specific procedures, by far and away the largest response category dealt primarily with lack of time and labor. And for that reason, there has been a significant amount of effort among reproductive biology groups across the country over the last 10 years to really try and focus in on improved methods of estrous cycle control to where we either minimize the period of time over which we have to spend physically detecting heat or lead us to opportunities where we can breed cows at predetermined fixed times. What I hope you'll leave with today is somewhat of an awareness of the fact that improvements in methods to synchronize estrus that do reduce time and labor required to detect heat. We think, and I think this opinion is shared by a number of the repro groups across the country, now create an opportunity to significantly expand the use of AI in the U.S. cow herd. And I'll get to those points relative to some of the data a little bit later on. In considering where we're at relative to the U.S., I think we also have to consider what's going on globally in terms of adoption of reproductive technologies. We were part of a symposium in 1999 at our American Society of Animal Science meetings, and residing in Columbia, Missouri, which is the headquarters for the National Association of Animal Breeders, we have the luxury of communicating with them fairly easily relative to tracking domestic and import beef semen sales. And we were aware of the fact that there were significant changes occurring in South America relative to adoption of technologies, specifically reproductive technologies with cows. And so we were interested in comparing those. Bob Hope from the Red Agus Association spoke at the BIF meetings a couple of years ago, and this slide was borrowed from a set of his slides showing more or less where the United States has been over the last 20 years from 1980 to 2000 in terms of domestic sales of beef semen. And you can see that line is relatively flat. Roughly about 1 million units of semen have been purchased or sold on an annual basis over or during that 20-year period. These are the statistics that I think are extremely concerning relative to global competition. We recently got the statistics for 2003 and were able to make a comparison over a 10-year period looking at the volume of both import and domestic beef semen sales in the U.S. versus Brazil during that 10-year period. And as you can see, in 1993, a little over 1 million units of semen, beef semen, were purchased in the United States as compared to a slightly lower number, actually an 8% decline in 2003. To contrast that, in Brazil, you can see there's a fairly significant growth in the use of AI in beef cows in particular in that country. And the point that needs to be made is that it's not just Brazil. It's Argentina and other major players in terms of the beef industry. What they've experienced relative to growth is 161% increase. And so the point that needs to be made is that when we consider the U.S. cow herd, and viability long term, many of us are beginning to feel that the seed stock industry in this country will remain viable well into the future. But with the rate of accelerated use of technology in the major players on the world market, the quality of cattle produced worldwide is going to begin to continue to improve at a fairly alarming rate. And what that perhaps could mean on down the road in terms of major competitions with the U.S. commercial cattle industry, I think, is worth. This graph illustrates, and again, contrasts what we see in the United States versus Brazil. And what it does is it summarizes domestic and import beef semen sales, or semen sales for both beef and barium in total in that country. And as you can see here, the yellow lines reflect what's happening, or the yellow bars reflect what's happened from the year 1999 to 2003 relative to dairy semen sales or purchases, whereas the brown lines reflect what's happening or what's happened relative to the almost linear increase relative to increased use of beef AI. And then obviously the blue bars reflect that combined total. So it's our opinion that unless efforts are taken to implement some degree of change in the U.S. beef cattle industry, many of the products of our research and technology may be exported to more competitive international markets, as we just saw. So let's talk a little bit about tools that producers here can hopefully consider relative to implementing technology into their herds to make some of these practices more feasible. When we consider effective estrus synchronization programs for beef cattle, and this has largely been a focus of what we've been involved with over the last 15 to 20 years, obviously the first and foremost consideration is that these programs need to be designed to facilitate AI and embryo transfer more effectively. They need to reduce the period of time to detect heat to where, as in most situations now, there are, especially during the breeding season, there's many other things occurring in terms of management considerations. And so the physical time that people have available to actually detect heat in many cases has been reduced. The other point that I think is significant is that obviously many of the protocols, including if we go back to the development of, we know that various drugs or protocols can be used fairly effectively on cycling cattle. But that bottom point in terms of the dilemma that each one of you faces as you go into the breeding season on an annual basis is the percentage of females, whether it's heifers or cows, that have either failed to reach puberty or return to heat following calving. And to try and get the most bang for your buck, those are the classes of females that need the greatest consideration. So what we've been working on is the development of highly effective and economical synchronization programs that are effective both in peripubertal heifers, postpartum cows that are both anestrus and cycling. And we've emphasized in our research program because I was in graduate school during the Synchromate B era, and one of the things that troubled me the most about that was the fact that we would get incredibly wonderful response rates in terms of getting cattle into heat. But when we went back to do the preg checks on those cattle, our results oftentimes were fairly disappointing and most times inconsistent from ranch to ranch that we worked with. The bottom line here is, again, the focal point. Either reduce the period of time significantly that we have to detect heat, whether it's with heifers or cows, or actually work toward opportunities to breed cows or heifers at predetermined fixed times. You get kind of everyone on the same page because everyone's appreciation of the estrus cycle in general, I think, is perhaps somewhat mixed in this audience. I think the first thing we need to do is establish several facts relative to the estrus cycle in general. For all intents and purposes, the average length of the estrus cycle in cattle can be considered to be about 21 days, but you can see there can be a range there of anywhere from 18 to 24 days. Standing heat can occur anywhere from 12 to 18 hours in length, but as you can see, there can be ranges. And a lot of the work that we've been involved with over the last and it's been amazing to us to see in some situations the range even more dramatic than what's shown on this slide relative to the 8 to 30 hours. The final point is significant relative to ovulation and considerations that we'll be making later on in the presentation in terms of fixed time AI programs where we actually are inducing ovulation. And when we consider the fact that from the time a cow begins to show signs of standing heat to when she actually ovulates, we're talking about a period of anywhere from 28 to about 32 hours in time. I want to just work through a schematic relative to the estrus cycle in general, and a couple of points here. We're considering the estrus cycle, as I indicated earlier, to be about a 21-day interval from one heat, which is represented by this first arrow, and followed by a second heat if the cow fails to become pregnant by the second. What will happen is, once a cow exhibits estrus, or begins to exhibit signs of behavioral estrus, and then, as indicated on that previous slide, actually goes on to ovulate, we're talking about, as I mentioned earlier, a period of about 28 to 32 hours. Beginning at about day 5 to 6, typically what will happen is that you'll have the development and formation of a corpus luteum, which is responsible for production of the hormone progesterone. And if the cow is inseminated or mated, progesterone is actually what will maintain or is responsible for maintenance of pregnancy in that cow or heifer. the thing that we've learned with the support of ultrasound in many research programs across the country over the last 10 to 15 years is the fact that simultaneous with what's happening relative to development and formation of the corpus luteum is also being affected or influenced in terms of what's happening at the level of the ovary relative to follicular dynamics. And the point there is as you can see, there'll be a small cohort of follicles continue to grow, and actually one or two of those follicles will actually grow at an increasing rate relative to the larger pool of follicles that originally arise. One of those follicles will actually go ahead and be selected and actually achieve what we call dominance. And the point that needs to be made here relative to a dominant follicle is that dominant follicles, when they reach a millimeter size range of 10 millimeters or greater, those follicles are actually capable of responding to the hormone, gonadotropin-releasing hormone, and we'll talk about that here in a moment. But it is fairly critical relative to how the protocols will be reviewing set cows up, because if you are going to be inducing ovulations on cows, you've got to move them into a size of follicle size status to where they're capable of responding to that injection. What will happen in a normal, or over the course of a normal estrous cycle, is the fact that from one heat to the next, you'll actually have the development and occurrence of actually anywhere from 2 to 3 of these follicular waves. And as you can see here, the first wave typically, from that wave, a follicle will be identified as selected, achieve dominance, but then become atretic or more or less die. Following that occurrence, you'll have a subsequent cohort of follicles emerge, and from that, then a second dominant follicle will develop to the point where once progesterone concentrations or levels decline, if the cow is assuming a normal estrous cyclicity status and has not become pregnant or has not been mated, then what will happen is in the absence of progesterone, the cycle will have the opportunity to repeat itself, and this will culminate in estrus and ovulation at the end of that time frame. So, when we talk about the various classes of drugs that we're going to be reviewing over the course of this presentation, I think it's important to consider first that PGF2-alpha, calcitonin F2-alpha, is responsible for regression of the corpus luteum. In other words, it's only effective and will only exert an influence in terms of bringing cows into heat if it's administered roughly between days 6 and 16 of the estrous cycle. Okay? So if you go back to that graph that I showed you relative to what happens hormonally relative to cows or heifers from one heat to the next, we're talking about a period of efficacy relative to prostaglandin injection that will only occur from over about a 10-day period. When we're talking about GnRH is responsible for the induction of ovulation, and it more or less resets or synchronizes the follicular waves in cows. And used in combination with prostaglandin F2-alpha, we're gaining much better control relative to bringing cows into heat over a much narrower window of time. The third class of drugs that we'll be talking about are the progestins. And these are the class of drugs that we've worked with extensively over the last 20 years, beginning with the time that I was in graduate school. And this class of drugs, I think, is extremely important from the standpoint of considering their relevance in terms of affecting an induction of cyclicity in non-cycling females, whether it's heifers or whether it's cows that have either not yet reached puberty or among cows that have not yet returned to estrus following calving. These are the products that are currently available by product name. The prostaglandin products, luteolyse, estronate, prostanate, and NSYNC. The GnRH products, Sistrelin, Factrel, Fertigil, and Ovisist. And the two progestins that are available, many of you are probably familiar with MGA, and more recently, the controlled internal drug release device that was recently gained FDA approval, just known as the CEDAR, or referred to as the CEDAR. Okay, I want to talk now for a moment about heifers. And I think the important thing is to try and establish and be done management-wise to help us do better jobs with heifers than we've done in some cases in the past. And in the introduction, it was mentioned that we have a large heifer development and marketing program in Missouri called the Show Me Select program. And some of the things that we talked about relative to procedures used on heifers to help us identify heifers that are good candidates to synchronize are actually a requirement in our program. The first thing, obviously, when we talk about breeding heifers is that the main considerations relate primarily to puberty. And the two things that are going to influence whether heifers are cycling going into the breeding season or approaching cyclicity status are their age and their weight. And so heifers should be selected that are going to be of adequate age and should be fed and supplemented nutritionally to reach those pre-breeding target weights. But it should be in the range of about 60 to 65% going into that first breeding season. The final point is the part of the pre-breeding exam that we refer to as a requirement in our program, and it's a reproductive tract score. It's a physical palpation, or in many cases we have practitioners now that are using ultrasound to evaluate where heifers are at reproductively. And more or less what it does is it gives us some gauge of development relative to uterine development as well as palpable structures on the ovary. This table, which was developed at Colorado State, more or less summarizes what's involved in terms of a reproductive tract score. First of all, to get everybody on the same page, the tract scores range from 1 to 5. 1 indicates that the heifer has an infantile reproductive tract and is a fair distance away from reaching puberty or attaining estrous cyclicity. Scores of 2s and 3s indicate that the heifers are not yet cycling, but as you move from a 2 to a 3, those heifers are approaching cyclicity at a much greater rate. And these heifers are considered to be actually, in terms of the track score 3 heifers, roughly about 30 days away from reaching puberty. Scores of 4s and 5 indicate that the heifers actually are cycling, and there's simply a difference relative to whether to be in the luteal phase of their cycle. So when they're palpated, there should be a palpable corpus luteum present on one of the ovaries of the heifer, and that heifer is considered to be roughly between days 6 to 16 of her cycle. A score of 4 indicates that the heifer is actually in the follicular phase of her cycle, and so she's either in heat at the time of the exam or on the verge of coming into heat. When that table was first developed, I had done a lot of my graduate work in the area of puberty onset in heifers, and I frankly was somewhat skeptical of its utility. And when I joined the faculty at the University of Kentucky, we began there in central Kentucky a fairly large heifer development program, which is still in effect today. But we began collecting data on heifers on farms and ranches across the state that were involved in the program to try and make sense of whether or not it could be used to predict a heifer's readiness to go into more or less a synchronization of the AI program. And what you can see here is a table reflecting about data on close to 3,000 heifers, and you can see differences relative to weight of these heifers and how that translates into pelvic dimensions, which is a requirement relative to how we evaluate these heifers, their weight, tract score, and pelvic. And finally, what that end product resulted in relative to estrus response during the synchronized period in relationship to tract score among all these heifers that were placed at that time on the 14-17-day MGA prostaglandin program. Now, the point that I want to make relative to this slide is critical. Lots of people, when they first see this slide, say, well, all you have to do is go in and weigh a group of heifers, and you can more or less predict where they're at. That is simply not the case. We have actual weight ranges on heifers within track score on 60,000 heifers in our program now statewide, and we have close to 300 to 400 pound swings in heifers that fit in any one of these track score categories. And so the point there is that if you're going in and especially considering using synchronization, and one of the things that we have seen in Missouri roughly 8 years now is a significant growth in the use of AI in heifers, largely because having done the pre-breeding exams, as I've mentioned here, people are not having the wrecks with synchronization that they have had in the past. that the point relative to this is that heifers need to be about, in terms of a group of heifers, roughly 50% of them need to track score 4 and 5 if they're ready to go on a treatment. If you're down in the 15, 20, 25, 30% range, more or less those heifers are probably behind nutritionally. And what you can expect is, based on what you can see here, if you have a higher percentage of heifers that track score 2 or 3, you can more or less predict, based on those data, what the estrus response rate during the 6-day synchronization period is going to be. So, when should you do them? Timing is critical. The point that needs to be made relative to timing is that we recommend that it be combined with when pre-breeding booster vaccinations are administered to heifers. And that should be roughly 6 to 8 weeks before they begin a treatment. And relative to this, many of the heifers in the program that we've worked with, the majority of those heifers over the last number of years have been on the long-term MGA prostaglandin treatment. And so, essentially, we try and get those heifers track scored roughly 2 weeks before they begin a treatment to be synchronized. The final point is important, and I think it's something that you need to consider if you're doing this, is that if those heifers are ready to go, and we can more or less predict this based on the volume of data that we have, our recommendation is that 50% of them or more are cycling. The balance of those heifers typically can be expected to respond to the progestin treatment with response rates in the 80 to 90% range. This is a slide that I think is significant from our heifer program in Missouri that Dr. Richard Randall recently summarized. And there's close to 11,000 heifers shown on this table. And the point that I think is really significant relative to the utility of synchronization is pregnancy rates of heifers in natural service versus synchronized in AI herds. And as you can see here, the numbers, at least that are represented in this data set, reflect the fact that we have many more heifers being synchronized than those that are going into straight natural service, no synchronization treatment imposed on those heifers. And the point that I want to make relative to this is I want you to look at the data across rows, okay? What we have here are reproductive tract scores by the 1-5 classification. But you can see as you move across tract score, this first series of numbers reflects 21-day pregnancy rates of the heifers by tract score. And then the following columns represent pregnancy rates at the end of a 42-day period. And as you can see, these superscripts A versus B in each of these rows reflect that these numbers are biologically different or statistically significantly different from one another. So the point that needs to be made relative to this slide is the fact that regardless of the track score type or class that heifers fell in, there was a definite benefit realized from placing those heifers on a synchronization program because it advanced the date of conception of those heifers during the breeding season. Now, one point that we get into in terms of consideration of these data and others like it relates somewhat to where you fit in the cattle industry. If you're in the seed stock business, onset of puberty is a fairly highly heritable trait. In fact, it's one of the only reproductive traits that has any degree of significant heritability to it. The progestin treatments actually can advance puberty onset. And so if you're in the purebred business and selling bulls or females to customers, you in many cases want to have a handle on what puberty or age of puberty is going to be in your herd. So I think one of the things you need to consider if you are in that segment of the industry, you need to consider whether or not you want to use a progestin to mask a trait that has a fairly high degree of economic significance attached to it. The counter to that is if you're in the commercial cattle industry, it's our feeling that you want to try and get and buy that. If you can use management tools to support that, I think that creates an opportunity for you to help accomplish that goal. So, some general considerations related to heifers in general. Begin breeding heifers roughly 2 to 3 weeks before cows, and one of the things that I think you need to do if you're going to be using AI, use proven bulls. The industry, relative to the availability of data that's out there, to try and minimize both the incidence and severity of calving difficulty, create future replacement daughters, etc., you need to be considering using bulls that are fairly highly proven, as opposed to ones you may be more or less gambling with. Now, in terms of the protocols, really the only two protocols that I'm going to spend any degree of time talking about. And the one point that I want to make is if all of you did not receive a laminated sheet with one side summarizing beef cow protocols and another beef heifer protocols on the reverse side, you'll need to pick one up on the table outside as you leave today. How that sheet came about was we had a symposium. Our North Central Region Reproduction Group met in North Platte, Nebraska in September. And collectively, the four major AI organizations in the United States, the pharmaceutical industry, those of us that work in reproduction in the North Central States and the veterinary community met following that symposium because there is so much confusion in the industry right now as to the names of protocols, what those names mean relative to the series of injections or drugs that are involved, and the protocols that are working most effectively. And so those protocols listed on that sheet fit into one of three categories. Those that are recommended on straight heat detection, those that are recommended relative to heat detect combined with fixed-time AI after a certain point in time relative to any non-responding females that have not exhibited heat up to that time, you go ahead and time-breed those females, or straight time-bred AI categories. And so I hope that will actually help you out relative to student in my programs back of the room. He's the fellow that spent a fair bit of time creating that. So if you have any questions about it at the end of the program, we can visit about it. Protocols for beef heifers that I think need to be considered based on the volume of data that's out there is the 14-19-day MGA prostaglandin program and the 7-day cedar prostaglandin program. Relative to MGA in general, it's an orally active progestin. It was developed back in the 60s for use in feedlot heifers to suppress heat and prevent ovulation. And essentially, in a feedlot setting, it works very similar to the way an implant does, because essentially what will happen is that in suppressing heat, you'll change what's happening as far as follicular dynamics, and heifers will see increased levels of estrogen or estradiol. And in that sense, it works in much the way anabolic steroids do in terms of affecting an improvement in growth rate and feed efficiency. But during that time, relative to its development for use in feedlots, there was continued interest in using it to manipulate or work with the estrous cycles of heifers and cows. And Ken Otey's group at Colorado State actually developed the 14-17-day system, and then Cliff Lamb and Gene Deitcher at the University of Nebraska and Kansas State, respectively, modified the protocols of the 14-19-day treatment schedule. And essentially, what you can see on this slide reflects what's happening relative.